you believe. Assault is an act, not an adjective. Your safety is not just on the gun, it is the gun. Freedom is a fundamental human right. Welcome to your show, Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes. What do you believe? Your safety is your responsibility, not the government's, not anybody else's. Be a citizen, not a subject. Better yet, be a listener, because it's an inalienable right, not a privilege. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is live, right now. Call 1-800-313-9443.
And good morning, everybody. It's Bill Carnes sitting in here on 2A Radio. I got to ask, what happened to my morning applause from the audience? Thank you. Thank you. I feel much better now. Wow, I was feeling left out in the cold for a minute there. Welcome to the show, guys. I got to tell you, we're going to talk a little bit about FEMA and their 2009 exercise today. I've gotten all kinds of emails and such speaking about this this event. It's called NLE09, which is National something, I don't know. And what they're doing is they do an exercise every year. This is as designed by the administration and as mandated by law through Congress post 9/11. That FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, will do an exercise annually to prepare for what could be some sort of terrorist attack, or they could go so far as to prepare for some sort of national disaster. Now, keep in mind, things such as FEMA trailers and FEMA loans and FEMA food are just kind of the touchy-feely parts of FEMA to gain a little bit of public trust or public support, really. But their job, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, is to manage emergencies through the federal government. They would actually be the immediate managers, the immediate supervisors of handling a federal emergency. If that needed to include local police, state police, the military, to a certain extent, the National Guard, whatever it would take, FEMA has the authority through law to be able to take control of these various agencies and even to go so far as to take over utility companies, things such as that, to coordinating off roadways and access points. They become essentially the administrators of martial law. I have gotten a number of emails, even from a couple people, one in particular who's going to be involved in NLE 09, claiming that there's going to be foreign troops on U.S. soil and that they're going to be working. This would be foreign troops out of Canada, Great Britain, Mexico, and Australia. Certainly friends to the U.S. for the most part. I'm not going to throw Mexico in there so much because they are the most corrupt of the group by far, if you consider the other four, including the U.S., that they would actually be on U.S. soil doing exercises in a post-terrorist environment, doing their best to find who was responsible and prevent further terrorism. Now, that's as it's been outlined in the emails and communications to me. Well, just earlier today, I placed a phone call to FEMA and talked to somebody who is highly involved in the NLE 09 exercise. And what I'm going to do after the break is I'm going to give you the conversation in somewhat of a nutshell on how things went and my interpretations of what's going to be going on with NLE 09. And I will invite your retort at 800-313-9443. This is Bill Carnes on 2A Radio.
Your right to listen and take action shall not be infringed. 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back. 1-800-313-9443.
Okay, so we're back on this NLE09. It stands for National Level Exercise, and FEMA is the agency which coordinates this and puts this together. Let me read you something right off of the FEMA government website. It says, National Level Exercise 2009, NLE09, is scheduled for July 27th through July 31st, 2009. So 27, 28, 29, 30, 31, 5 days, 1 week. NLE 09 will be the first major exercise conducted by the United States government that will focus exclusively on terrorism prevention and protection as opposed to incident response and recovery, which is really what FEMA was created for. So that means terrorism prevention and protection. Now, what that screams in common language is preparation for martial law based on intelligence, be it false or certified, false or proper. Now, let me give you an example of false intelligence. When Bush stood up, Bush 2 stood up in front of the nation on the State of the Union address and said that they had intelligence that would show that Iraq was trying to get yellow cake, which is an ingredient used to make nuclear weapons, or as George Bush called it, nuclear. What a goof, nuclear. So in that testimony, that ended up being absolutely false, totally false intelligence. So whether it's based on actual intelligence or interpreted intelligence or just plain false information, it sounds as though it is a martial law capacity sort of a thing, the way they read it. Again, it says exclusively on terrorism prevention and protection. NLE 09 is designated as a Tier 1 national level exercise. Tier 1 exercises are conducted annually in accordance with the National Exercise Program, NEP, which serves as the nation's overreaching exercise program for planning, organizing, conducting and evaluating national level exercises. The NEP was established to provide the U.S. government at all levels exercise opportunities to prepare for catastrophic crises ranging from terrorism to national disasters. I don't know that it ranges from one to the other. It seems as though it is for terrorism or natural disasters. I don't know if there's really anything in between the two, as it would sound the way it was written here. NLE 09 is a White House directed, so that means Obama and the administration literally direct what's going to be going on, congressionally mandated exercise that includes the participation of all appropriate federal departments and agency senior officials, their deputies, staff, and key operational elements. That means they could bring in any and all levels of the federal government as they so see fit. In addition, broad regional participation of state, tribal, local, and private sector is anticipated. This year, the United States welcomes the participation of Australia, Canada, Mexico, and the United Kingdom in NLE 09. That's all I needed to hear. Now, I kept reading. There's more here. NLE 09 will focus on the intelligence and information sharing amongst intelligence and law enforcement communities and between international, federal, regional, state, tribal, local, and private sector participants. The NLE 09 scenario will begin in the aftermath of a national terrorist event outside of the United States. An exercise play will center on preventing subsequent efforts by terrorists to enter the U.S. and carry out additional attacks. This scenario enables participating senior officials to focus on issues related to preventing terrorist events domestically and protecting U.S. critical infrastructure. So what this means is they're going to play as though a terrorist event is happening elsewhere in the world. And then how do they essentially lock down the United States and put in some form of martial law and find out what's going on? In my interpretation, if these guys are not involving the militia. Now you say, where do we go find the militia? Well, we should create it. It's in the Second Amendment. The militia should be organized, and this should be involved. This should be part of the armed citizens. That's why Japan never landed on the U.S. West Coast for an invasion of the mainland, because of the armed citizens. Terrorists would be wise to understand that as well. We cannot rely on the government. We legally cannot rely on the government, as efficient or rather inefficient as they'll ever be, to provide us any form of protection on an individual basis. NLE 09 will allow terrorism prevention efforts to proceed to a logical end, successful or not, with no requirements for response or recovery activities. So that means that they don't have any goals at the end. They're just going to see how it goes. NLE 09 will be an operations-based exercise to include activities taking place at command posts, emergency operation centers, intelligence centers, and potential field locations to include federal headquarter facilities in Washington, D.C., and in federal, regional, state, tribal, local, and private sector facilities in FEMA Region 6, which includes the states of Arkansas, Louisiana, New Mexico, Oklahoma, and Texas. Here are the exercise objectives. Intelligence and information sharing and dissemination, counterterrorism investigation and law enforcement, air, border, and maritime security, critical infrastructure protection, public and private sector alert notification and security advisories, and international coordination. And then they're also going to be validating the Homeland Security System. So they say for any information about NLE 09, call the FEMA News Desk at 202-646-4600, which is exactly what I did. And just earlier today, just less than an hour ago, as a matter of fact, I called that number, and I ended up being connected with a Mr. Seamus at FEMA. Okay, Mr. Seamus at FEMA. I spoke to him, and I said, now, I understand that you're inviting participation based on what you say on your website from the following nations: Australia, Canada, Mexico, and the United Kingdom. Are there foreign troops involved, like military troops involved? And he said, no, absolutely not. This is strictly law enforcement involvement when it comes to anybody that may be seen as an authority figure. Does not include military or National Guard. I'm sorry, he did not say National Guard. He said it does not include military, and it does not include anyone armed from any other country. More as a coordination effort, and also so as the impression he gave to me was that the foreigners that are coming over would be there to help as though they were in their countries and we were passing information back and forth, but they'd be there also in a physical capacity so that they could learn and potentially take this information back to their countries, because they are kind of a FEMA of their countries, some of the people that are coming over here. So that is what was explained to me, that there are no foreign troops that are going to be here in the U.S., on U.S. soil, doing anything at all. They're not even going to be here. So that's what I get. Now, as I read through this, it does specifically say a lot to do with law enforcement. However, it does say air, border, and coastal security. Is that what it said? I'm sorry. I'm reading through this trying to find it again. But the question is, where does that come from? Does that come from the Coast Guard? Well, Coast Guard is part of the military. Does it come from Border Patrol? Well, Border Patrol is certainly part of federal law enforcement, which it said is listed. And what about air? Does that come from the Air Force? Of course, they're military. So I'm wondering where the coastal and the air security is coming from, because it is not designated. You would think it would come from those two efforts. It might be National Guard for the air. I don't know, Air National Guard. I'm not sure where that comes from. But what I'm going to do is invite your comments on these. Some of you folks that are out there, Quince, I know that you're involved with this information. I'd like to find out a little information from what you guys are seeing on this, Because if I can get enough information here to call Mr. Seamus back and direct some very specific questions to him as someone from Republic Broadcasting, and I'd like to know this information as I host a radio show and would like to dispel this information to the listening audience, I would like to get information from you guys. Now, I certainly have a number of questions reading this. I just didn't have the time to go through it early this morning, but I will create the time to call Mr. Seamus back with questions and concerns, as long as they're legitimate, guys. Please don't call me up or send me emails with a bunch of goofy, abstract, absolute conspiracy theorist sort of things. Let's get some legitimate things going here, and we can have a little bit of participation in this and talk to Mr. Seamus about this. So I invite your comments coming up throughout the rest of the show, and or you can certainly send me emails. I get a lot of emails on this sort of stuff. So National Level Exercise 09 is not going, he said, it's not going to affect the average person. If you are not specifically involved, and if you are involved, you would already know by now, you should see absolutely no difference or effect in your daily life whatsoever during the exercise. So there you go. Good thing to know we can trust our government, because they're always straight up and they always tell us the truth. Certainly, if there was something hinky going on, Mr. Seamus is certainly not going to know about it. It's going to be garbage in, garbage out. They're going to feed him a line of BS so that he can dispel it, knowing that he's not lying, at least not directly. Stay tuned through the break. This is Bill on 2A Radio.
Irresponsible people have no business owning a gun or listening to this show. 2A Radio with Bill Carnes, 1-800-313-9443.
And welcome back from the break. I've got a story for you. It's called Two Shot During a Robbery Had a BB Gun. Okay, so listen to this. This is pure stupidity on the part of the bad guys. Of course, if you're a bad guy, you're pretty stupid to begin with. However, the two men who were shot by a security guard while trying to rob a Milwaukee check-cashing business last week were armed with realistic-looking BB guns, according to a police department spokeswoman. Now, keep in mind, if you're going to introduce a gun, you're automatically raising the level of the encounter to that of a deadly force situation. And if you don't have a real gun, you just want to play like you've got a gun, so you get a real-looking gun, you're really freaking stupid. Because what you've done now is anybody with a real gun is going to go up against you with a fake gun, and you're the one who instigated this. That is how ultimately stupid you really are. Ronald X. Reed Jr., 24 years old, was shot in the back and died at the scene, police said. His cousin, 22-year-old Vlad D. Mason, was shot in the abdomen. The BB guns, quote, looked very much like authentic weapons, end quote, said a police spokeswoman. The men also used BB guns while committing a string of armed robberies in 2005, court records show. Reed and Mason were wearing masks as they entered Check Into Cash on Wednesday afternoon and ordered everyone to the floor, including the armed guard, police said at the time. So, if these guys are going into this check cashing place, something tells me they've seen the place before. They cased it. Anybody who's even a halfway reasonable armed robber has at least cased a place once, even if only for mere moments. That would indicate, in that casing, that there was an armed guard there, as in the guy had a gun. And now you and your cousin are going to come in there with BB guns. All right? So we're showing the level of stupidity here. One cousin told the other to shoot the guard who got up and fired shots at both men, police said. Maybe he was so stupid he forgot that they weren't real guns. Shoot the guard with what? A BB? Reed ran from the store and collapsed in a nearby alley. Perfect. Mason also ran and turned up at a hospital a short time later. So Reed ran and collapsed in a nearby alley. So dead in an alley, shot in the back, stupid robber. I couldn't find a more fitting end, unless he actually died on the steps of a mortuary or perhaps in a graveyard. But in an alley sounds rather appropriate. The preliminary investigation suggests the guard, who has not been identified, was properly licensed to carry a gun on the job, police said. You know, I know, who reports this? Properly licensed to carry a gun on the job. You know what? He's got a right to protect. And he was in there, whether he was on the job or not on the job. He has a right to protect himself and others. Properly licensed. The guard is employed by Pratt Security and Investigations. Good for Pratt Security. The company's president, John Pratt, said the company and its employees have the proper licenses and permits. He declined to answer questions about the robbery and shooting. Okay, blah, blah, blah. The Milwaukee County District Attorney's Office will review the incident this coming Monday, Schwartz said. Reed and Mason were also armed with BB guns when they committed five armed robberies together over 4 days in 2005, targeting people returning home late at night in the city's west side, according to a criminal complaint filed against them. Both were convicted in 2006 of two counts of armed robbery, according to online court records. Okay, this goes back to what I was saying a couple of weeks ago. Anybody convicted of a crime where there was a gun used, convicted of a felony where a gun was used, they should be put upon their release on a national website where you can look at it as though they were on the sex offender list. This should be the repeat gun offenders list. These people committed a crime, a felony. They were convicted of a felony involving a firearm. They can no longer own firearms. Here's a website so you can look these people up. You know what they look like. You know where they live. They have to register with us just like a sex offender would. Both were convicted in 2006 on two counts of armed robbery, right? Reed was sentenced by Milwaukee County Circuit Judge to 3 years in state prison with credit for 263 days for time served and 5 years of extended supervision, the court record shows. So he was on probation. He was released from prison August 26th, this last August 26th. The judge sentenced Mason to 2 years in state prison with credit for 236 days for time served and 5 years of extended probation. Mason was released from prison August 21st, 2007. So he'd been out for not quite 2 years. The other guy had been out for less than a year, and they're out there doing this again. Wow. Something tells me they should have been up online. More when we come back. This is Bill Carnes on 2A Radio.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.
Rule one, assume it's loaded. Rule two, don't point it at anything you're not willing to destroy. Rule three, listen to the 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes. 1-800-313-9443.
Radio with Bill Carnes, 1-800-313-9443.
Imagine this. Today's riot of the day has to do with the federal government overstepping their boundaries yet again. This time, it happens to be the U.S. Customs and Border Protection Agency. How many of you right now, right this minute, have a pocket knife in your pocket, on your person right now? I know I do. Mine is like my American Express card. I never leave home without it. Matter of fact, I pretty much put it in my pocket as soon as I put my pants on in the morning. And I don't take it out until I take my pants off at night. I've got a pocket knife on me all the time. Always in the same spot. Always ready to deploy. It's one of these clip-on folders, as most people would enjoy. Well, the U.S. Customs and Border Protection Agency, they have the ability, they have been given the legal authority in what would appear to be an unconstitutional act to write regulation, which then in effect becomes law. Many people refer to this as the unconstitutional fourth branch of the government, which is an extension of the executive branch, the enforcement guys, that such as the IRS. They can write regulations, and once they write a regulation that doesn't need any excessive review outside of their organization, that essentially becomes law and prosecutable because it is now a regulation, because laws say they can create regulations as long as it's within the law that's passed. A law is passed, it is sent down to whatever department it would be, whatever bureaucracy or agency it would be, and then they can write regulations based on that law. So U.S. Customs and Border Protection, they handle shipments that come into this country, border protection such as that. They are the ones who look at the stuff that come into this country. One of the things they have a law against would be a switchblade knife. Essentially, you push a button and a spring ejects a long stiletto blade, a thin stiletto blade, out of this housing and locks it into place. Those are illegal in the United States based on the regulations of the U.S. Customs and Border Protection Agency. Now, when the Obama administration took hostile control of the White House and started doing their thing in this country, one of the things that they did as it filtered down was they took the group within the U.S. Customs and Border Protection Agency that looked at legalities of things such as, pardon me, knives. And they switched it to another group within the same agency that has virtually no experience looking at this. A company bringing some knives in, what they did was they went through the process. It is called the, a case involving a knife called the Van Hoy Assist, whose importers were represented in a request for affirmation of its legality by a San Francisco law firm. What happens is they say, look, we want to import this. We want to make sure it's legal. So they find a law firm which specializes in this sort of thing. The law firm takes it to Border Protection, Customs. They take it to the Customs office, and they say, look, based on your regulation, we'd like to have a review of this and let us know if this is legal to import. Okay. The knives first were approved by the agency in 2008, but only a few weeks later, Frederick McCray of the agency's Intellectual Property Rights and Restricted Merchandise Branch did a review. Now, this is one of the new guys. And he retracted the original approval. As a matter of fact, in his ruling, his individual ruling, he says, in the referred ruling, U.S. Customs and Border Protection determined that the knives at issue were admissible into the United States pursuant to the Switchblade Knife Act. We have reconsidered the rationale of and the admissibility determination made in the request, and found both to be in error. For the reasons set below, we are hereby revoking that approval. Okay? So this could mean nothing but headaches for the knife industry. Essentially, what this one guy did could make 80%, literally 80% of the knives in this country no longer legal, illegal to own, possess, carry, whatever. Now, how is this possible? Well, most states, not all, but most states tend to look at what the federal government considers to be legal or illegal when it comes to these sorts of things, and they just essentially copy and paste that into their law books and approve it. That's generally what's done. So if the Customs and Border Protection is going to go back and say that your Emerson, your Spyderco, your whatever, your folder, your from Tops, you can no longer have this. And now a lot of these are folding knives that are one-handed operation with a very light spring to assist them to open so they snap in vigorously. They may be considering those to be switchblades, and hence your $180 Emerson may be considered illegal. Your $120 Spyderco might be considered illegal. Actually, I don't know that Spyderco is using any springs. I carry a Spyderco. That's what I carry. It has a 3 and, I believe, 13/16 inch blade after a few sharpenings, a little shorter than the 15/16 it originally came out as. And the back of it has the serrated blade and kind of the Spyderco style of serrations, and the front half is smooth. This is the best knife I know to carry. As a matter of fact, this particular style I have carried for, I don't know, 15 years. This particular one I've got was a Christmas present in 2001, and I'll read it to you. Merry Christmas 2001. Love, Diane, who's my ex-wife, and the three daughters we have together. So the Spyderco that I carry happens to be the model ATS-55. One of the things I've had done to this is a good friend of mine, a man I respect immensely, one of my trainers, one of the guys that guided me in a lot of my training, my sniper trainer, and he's taught me immensely about stuff. It's a guy by the name of Magic Serbiak. Now, Magic is the consummate professional and the type of friend that if you're able to get on the inside with Magic, which is a long, tough road, which you really have to prove yourself to this guy for him to have any credence in you. I get it. For me, it was a long, tough road to mow. And he makes knives. And I asked Magic to put a little cut in the top portion of the back of this knife so it actually have what's referred to as a wave feature, so I could pull this back against the edge of my pocket and it would snap open, much as what the Emerson has. And he was kind enough to do that. And he did a wonderful job. So it's a highly customized when it comes to the look of it, Spyderco. I have a couple more of these knives, the exact same model that I carry. I do not have the wave feature cut in. I told Magic I would not send it to him and ask him to do it. I would bring it to him, and he lives several hours from me. So that's an excuse for me to go visit him. And this is a really rocking way to go. However, this knife does not have any spring on it. However, it is one-hand open assist. If nothing else, not out of the pocket, it's got a hole in the back that you can put your thumb in and, you could probably hear that crisply, snap it open. That right there might make this knife, being able to do that with just one hand, illegal. Well, I tell you, I will not give this knife up. I could care less what customs regulations say. Care less. So even if the state I'm in says it's legal, and let's say I want to travel to Arizona, which is a neighboring state of Nevada, or California, or Idaho, or Oregon, or Utah, all of the neighboring states of Nevada, and it's legal in all of those states. Well, let's discount California. I don't even know if you're allowed to breathe without proper permits there. But let's say I've traveled to Arizona with this same knife, and it's legal in Arizona. But because now I'm crossing from one state to the next, the federal regulation would then kick in. So am I now committing a federal offense by taking my knife, which is otherwise legal in both the two states? Would I then be committing a federal offense? Well, my response to that is, bring it on. I am not going to be the subject of tyranny. I will not. There are lines in the sand that I've got, and that is one of them. There are a couple of things that I will fight, literally, honest to God, real life, not just legal terms. We're talking physical action, fight over. There are certain things guaranteed to me by the Constitution and by the courts that I will load up my guns and defend over. And that's over my government's tyranny. There are lots of things I will load up my guns and defend over from tyranny of individuals, such as bad guys, trying to get what they want. There are lots of things I'll load up my guns over when it comes to potential terrorism in my home, on my soil, in my country. I got to tell you, when I woke up on September 11th, 2001, woke up to a phone call, hey, you got to turn on the TV. We're under attack. And there we go, watching all of this. I was watching television while loading magazines. I'm like, all right, this is it. I'm loading magazines. Of course, I strapped my gun right on. I did end up going into work. Now, I lived about an hour from work at the time. I did go to work that day. My family's in a small, secluded town that only had two different entry points, both of them miles off of any major highway, and a very tight-knit community. So, and you couldn't, you didn't know, if you didn't know any better, you wouldn't even know the communities were there. So a nice place, safe place for the family. And I made some calls around before I left that day. And when I left with a loaded handgun and two loaded rifles. That's what I left with that day. And that's what I carried for the longest time, readily accessible. I'm sorry, a loaded rifle and a loaded shotgun. I brought the shotgun in with me into my office. I was managing a manufacturing company. And I brought my shotgun in with me. I had the rifle in my car. I had the handgun on me. And that's the way things went for quite some time. So getting back onto this topic here, this is something I would not tolerate. You guys can make it legal or illegal, whatever you want. This is simply a tool. And this tool I use all the time, it's all kinds of scratched up. I have to send this thing. Lucky for me, Spyderco has a lifetime free sharpening policy. You send it to their place in Colorado, and they sharpen it, they send it back. It takes about a month to do that, which is why I have a couple other ones. If this one gets dull and I'm tired of just, you know, sharpening the smooth edge, I want the actual serrations to be sharpened. There's a very fine art to doing that on the design of the Spyderco. I trust only the manufacturer to do that. I've had a couple other people try. One of them nearly ruined the blade, and I was ready to bash the guy's head in because it was so horrible. And this guy is a professional in the field who'd been sharpening knives for a long time. Somebody that was recommended to me, never known the guy before, never said anything back, and certainly not recommended him since. I had to send it back to Spyderco for them to essentially recreate the edge on the blade of my special engraved Christmas present 2001 knife. I was livid, as you can imagine. So when I send this knife back to them, I got to send it in an original box. They sharpen it, send it back. It takes about a month. So I carry a backup knife, the same model, same style. Creature habit when it comes to that sort of thing. It doesn't have the wave feature, so I got to go visit Magic and get that put in there. Okay. If you carry a knife like I carry a knife, like Dave Champion carries a knife, like a lot of people that I know, and a lot of people that you know that carry knives, it is a tool. If you can't carry a gun in certain areas, if the unconstitutional laws prevent you from carrying a gun at this point in time, you can carry a knife. If it's just not the right scenario for you to be carrying a gun in, or you know, whatever it may be, you're not going to that day for whatever reason it may be, you can carry a knife. I always have my knife on me. And if this regulation goes through, and these goofballs decide to reinterpret a regulation that's already there, is essentially what it is. They're going to interpret it. People without experience in the field, going to interpret it on behalf of the hundreds of millions of people in the United States, it could create felonious activities by felonious devices on a federal level for all of us. I am not willing to stand for this. They're inviting public comment on this at the U.S. Customs Office, and I am going to give you that information, and I am going to ask of you to, they take written information. I don't know if they take emails or if it's just writing in. I'm going to give you some of that information, as vague as it is in this report, and ask everyone to send in and say, don't change a thing. Now, of course, they don't have to listen to us. And the more stupid people that give their opinion on this, the worse we're going to be. I don't know if any of you listen to Dave Champion. Of course, he is on at 3 o'clock Central Time, Monday through Friday. I encourage you to listen to the Dave Champion show. His show yesterday focused on the majority, which if the majority are stupid and or ignorant and have no business making a decision on something because they don't know anything about it, yet their voice is heard, that then becomes law or policy or whatever. So we need to have intelligent people saying, don't change a thing. You're the dumb ones. And I will give that information to you when we come back from the break. This is Bill Carnes on 2A Radio. Gun control, loved by dictators since 1917. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back. 1-800-313-9443. And welcome back from the break. As we have the National Rifle Association, Gun Owners of America, Second Amendment Foundation, Jews for the Preservation of Firearms Ownership, as we have these groups fighting for our gun rights, there are also groups fighting for rights for knives. And there is a website known as kniferights.org, kniferights.org. There's a guy by the name of Doug Ritter of kniferights.org who is doing his very best to fight this. If you go to kniferights.org, you can read all about it. And there are links on his website for different letters that you can send and where to send them. Now, Customs is taking public comment on this only for another 10 days, June 21st. That's it. And they have denied request. They have denied several requests for an extension on the public comment period so they can get the information out there. Why? They have an agenda. Of course they have an agenda. They are part of the Obama administration. For them to not do this is going to be incredible. However, if we have a tremendous amount of public comment that goes in there and say, don't change a thing. Don't you dare. And they decide to change it anyhow. It is possible for us to get the information of the public comments through the Freedom of Information Act. And if there was an overwhelming majority of people who put in that said, no, don't change this, and they change it anyhow, then we have some really thin boxing gloves that we can put on. Which thin boxing gloves are good because now they're going to feel the terror and the pounding of a big, heavy fist that's very softly lined. All right? So put in your comments. Go to kniferights.org. Look at it. Find the links and send this information off. Just so you know, the immediate past president of the NRA is Sandra Frohman. She is a member of kniferights.org, and she has actually put in her own little 2 cents on this deal. She actually said this: this is a commendable effort to protect the freedoms we both hold dear. I am pleased to support your efforts by joining Knife Rights as a cornerstone charter member, Sandy Frohman. All right, so there's a little bit of I guess, a little pitch from the gun group towards the knife group. We're all like-minded people. All right? So there's a lot of information on there. If you are good with the Second Amendment, you should certainly be good with this. Just about everybody I know who carries a gun also carries a knife. As a matter of fact, they generally carry their knife more than they carry their gun. And we never really think of our knife rights coming in as being jeopardized. We never really think of it like that. But at this point in time, right now they are. And we've got 10 days to get our information in there. For the public comment period. That's all we have. I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government, we will be watching you. In Congress, the executive and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule. Thank you for spending your morning with me. Stay tuned to RBN for more great programming. Send me the emails and have a wonderful day.
Bill will be here tomorrow. Will your freedoms? The Two-Way Radio Show, 7 a.m. Pacific, 9 Central, Monday through Friday.